Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
If you get to be 65 or 70 and later, and the people that you want to have love you actually do love you, you're a success.
Welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. It's Friday again. I can't believe it. Another week just flown past like that. And every time when we gathering together on the Friday wrap, it's our happy hours because we get to chat basically anything and everything about economics and property, and hopefully be able to share some of our own thoughts and you know, opinions about what's been happening around our world, especially in 2020. Gosh, it's been quite a fantastic 2020, I've got to say, right? So, gents, how are you doing? Jazz, John?
Really good, mate, really good. 2020 has been a year, and we are almost ending it, and hopefully 2021 won't repeat itself as 2020.
Mate, you took off your Nadal headband from last time, from the Federal Nadal one, isn't it? So, got a new hairstyle again.
I think I've taken the 2020 fine, so the headband can go to someone else for next year.
And John, how are you?
Yeah. I'm great. I've got 2020 fatigue as well. So,
oh, there you go.
Strangest year ever.
Everyone can't wait.
Yeah.
But it has been a fascinating year, I guess. A lot to be learned. I think when we look back in 2020, we actually find that there's a lot of things that we can get out of it. And I reckon maybe sometime in next year, when 2021, we might be able to pick a few of the key lessons, you know, from looking from hindsight, right? So what can investors get out of 2020, especially with COVID, especially with all the economic and political uncertainties around the world? What can investors get out of it? So maybe there'll be a special episode that we can do at some point next year.
Yep.
Sounds good. All right. Well, so gents, let's get into a few of our topics discussions this week. So it's actually been quite positive. I think this week it's all positive news. So I'm glad for a change, essentially, which wrapping up 2020 is a good way to end that with some positive notes. We've got the effective unemployment rate, which is basically dropping. And I mean, I'm just looking up on the charts here at the moment. And Jazz, you might just need to help me a little bit. Sure. So we've got the chart here, which hopefully we'll be able to share with listeners. But the official versus effective employment rate on here has obviously came down significantly. Is that the right reading?
Yeah. So basically, we discussed this effective unemployment rate about a month ago. In Australia, now it has fallen to 7.8% from a high of nearly 15%. So that is a fairly significant drop, which just gives more confidence that we have probably seen the peak of unemployment. And unemployment obviously contributes a fair bit into the... or employment contributes fair bit into the financial markets and the confidence overall. So this dropping gives a fair bit of confidence. And I think one of the biggest reasons for drop, in my opinion, is obviously Victoria. It was one of the things that we were watching closely, and it's dropped almost by 50%.
The last month was what? Around 15, 15. Isn't it? Last month was around 15. Is that correct? Yeah. So this month has dropped down, fallen down to about 7.8%. So it's pretty much halved.
Yeah. It looks positive to me from the way I look at it.
No, I agree. I think there's no other way to read that other than it's great news, which, you know, I love great news. So that's a good thing. You mentioned a word before, Jazz, that's critical, I think, which is confidence. If, you know, we can see Europe and North America potentially going into second lockdowns, we'll have to watch that. But confidence is really important to, you know, your ability to plan and decide if you're going to hire people. So if there is a second lockdown, and there may or may not be, I don't think there will be in Sydney, for example, but that'll break a kind of a fragile truce that we have with the economy. And we just need to watch that because we've had a pretty resilient bounce back. But if there's a second lockdown and if entrepreneurs stop their ability to plan and to see into the future, and the time horizon becomes very short-termist, you won't see the bounce back in the future if that happens. Mm. But just great news.
Yeah.
Great news.
I think, yeah, to add to your point, I mean, yeah, we've seen that now South Australia going into the lockdown, and David, we were discussing that just before the recording, mm-hmm. that if they contain it well, then we have learned our lessons and hopefully it stays where it is. Otherwise, something to be kept a close eye on more than anything else, but good for the financial markets overall.
That's right. I think it's excellent news, especially when we were all concerned about what the actual true employment / unemployment rates were, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day. And now that, you know, JobKeeper 2.0 is moving in, I think almost close to halfway. And there's going to be further extensions, obviously a further reduction as well when we move into January into mm-hmm. JobKeeper 3.0. But it looks like the unemployment rate's definitely trending in the right direction to be able to provide, at least from Australia perspective, that confidence that the consumers were looking and the businesses were hoping for to be able to recover quickly. So
yeah,
great news overall. And that also leads to another, talking about good trend or positive trend, that also leads to another one that we've seen this week from release from Australia Banking Association, ABA. They've basically released the latest data on the total loan deferrals from top seven banks. Essentially, it's a graph trending from 29th of April to 4th of November, and we can see at the moment the number of deferred loans has fallen below 300,000. Okay, so at the peak period, just so people've got some perspective, there were more than 900,000 loans which were deferred by Aussie banks. So we're literally less than one third of that right now, that's definitely a good news, and that reflects what we've been talking about as well in terms of low unemployment or effective unemployment being low. Mm. So I think the stories are in line, which is great, hopefully that loan deferral will continue to drop as we were hoping for, and there will be more business confidence moving mm-hmm. forward. So, anything else to add, gents?
No, it's just that that was again one of the caveats that we had to be watched, and it's dropped significantly, like you just mentioned, David. So
yeah,
I think that's overall positive again for the property markets. So something to be again just to keep an eye on, but it's looking good. And we'll bring it up in the future as well. John?
I just make one small point, I guess, which is that the policy settings are primed for a slow economy. So we've got interest rates at nothing. We've got a lot of stimulus in the bag. So the economy is ready for no velocity. It's assuming no one gets a pay rise, the unemployment's going to stay high. What happens if we have a bounce back, we go back to some good employment levels, if consumer spending comes back but interest rates are stuck at zero, that's a recipe for inflation essentially. But then you start to get things that run really too hot, and you get asset bubbles, and you get over capacity and all sorts of stuff. So if the unemployment rate stays high and consumer spending stays low, then our policy settings are right.
Mm-hmm.
If that changes, we're sowing the seeds for like a real estate bubble or a stock market bubble or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just worth having a look at.
It's interesting. That's something we did mention or touch on last week as well, where if something like that was to happen, probably APRA will intervene in some shape or form. But it's just something to be watched. I totally agree that with the low interest rates, unemployment dropping, the income boost through JobKeeper and JobSeeker, all that has been done, businesses hiring more and more. It's good news. It's kind of good news of where we headed for 2021, as long as it stays that way, which will create a bit of a bubble in the bubble. Bubble is not the right word. I hate the bubble. But it will definitely help the asset prices. And end of 2021 will be the interesting one. So, yeah.
David? We reckon it's a good. Are we primed for another boom coming up in 2021, or as we kind of like from these economists suggested, we got to wait until 2022.
I think it's more end of 2021, 2022, because COVID vaccine, like we discussed last time, won't be fully commercialized up until late 2021. So there's a COVID normal and there's a normal normal. Until we see the normal. then nothing significantly will change. House prices may go up by 3-5%, whatever that is, but it won't be crazy run. It will just be a normal inflation plus 2% kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it will be sooner. I think we essentially agree on the outlook for the next couple of years. And I think I'm just a bit more bullish earlier. I think that by this time next year, we'll be worried about whether we can unscramble the egg, whether we can put the genie back in the bottle. And I think we'll see. But I think it's possible that if there's no second lockdown or anything like that, we could have booming property markets. And I actually think that they won't mind that for a couple of years. So, but we'll come to that.
So there's a media boom that happens where the media will go, or there's a boom, or there's a real boom that will happen, which I think will be more like 2022. But which one are you talking, John?
2022 fully fledged boom.
All right, so we both agree on 2022 for the real top guys like us, or 2021 for the media, basically.
Will we talk about a boom next year?
Yeah,
mid-year.
But it's not. But it's not a fully fledged boom until 2022, John. Based on John's opinion, isn't it?
the red flags go up in 2022.
Yes, I agree on that.
We're enjoying the spiked punch bowl in 2021.
That's right.
Awesome. That's good. Now, well, we're making some predictions here, but let's see what actually just out. Funny thing is, the major banks have also came out adjusting their forecast, and I think we've seen ANZ made the update basically last week to say that it is now looking. They basically updated their forecast from a bearish 10% decline in 2021 now to a 9% lift instead. So that's pretty much that's a 180. Now the reasoning for that is the counterweight of low rates and government stimulus has flowed through to housing construction approvals and sentiment, and the peak to trough decline will be limited to about 2%. Mm-hmm. So, breaking it down, I think it just comes down to, based on the figures that we've seen so far, even with the unemployment rate that we've seen, with the loan deferral dropping a lot quicker than what people were anticipating, that's why they came out and kind of made that statement to say, hey, we are actually expecting a pretty bullish 9% lift in 2021, and that corresponds to the NAB as well. I think NAB also made an update on their prediction as well. They're now seeing a 5% house price growth in 2021, and as well beforehand. I think they were I can't remember how much the negative before as well. So this seems to be a common trend. I don't know what the CBA's made it. The CBA may have also made it as well, but I couldn't find the data. But it seems to be a common trend that people are now expecting, like what we said, 2021 will be a boom, as in a happy boom for everyone, but it won't be a boom or a fully-fledged boom. But in 2022, it's probably when things will actually happening, isn't it? Do you guys agree that next year maybe looking at 5 to 10% in general?
A 5% shouldn't be called a boom. That's not a boom, right? So... like we just said before, it's more 2022 where the prices will go a little bit more crazier when everything is normal. But it's good that all the surveys that are being conducted have taken a sharp U-turn as well, like we did in September or October this year. So I think they must have listened to John's prediction, my guess is.
don't do that, NAB.
They're running the risk of getting it right for the first time.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason I thought that property prices would go up is I put a chart of the last 50 years, and every time there was a stock market crash, there was a property boom. So if you look at 1987, look at... 2008, and there was always a property boom that followed a major stock market crash. And the reason for that was that property responds more slowly to panic, to crises, but it responds very quickly to economic stimulus. So you know, because it's a liquid, and if you're in trouble, you sell your liquid assets, you sell your stocks, but you don't sell your property. Mm-hmm. By the time we've got through the fear stage of a market sell-off, all this new stimulus is in the system, and so suddenly debt becomes cheap, and then real estate rides the wave. So put short, you know, I guess pithily, it catches the stimulus, but it doesn't catch the panic. That's kind of how real estate tends to work. Real estate has another cycle, though, that when they start tightening, that's worse for real estate. So there is another side of that story. I mean, NAB not only said 5% next year, but they said 6% for the next year, the next 2 years after that. So they're bullish. Now, the interesting thing is, if they're even a little bit wrong, and let's say it's 7% or 8% the next couple of years, then we're in a fully fledged boom, I would suggest. The important thing, of course, is the direction. They're saying that we're in growth mode for the real estate markets, and you know, we kind of touched on it a couple of moments ago, but I think they'll let it run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they'll let it run because real estate's had a bit of a rocky road for about the last 3 to 4 years. It mm-hmm. actually hasn't been, you know, the best investment since about 2017. We had a big correction between 17 and 19. Then in 2020, we had COVID. So if you look at the last 3 to 4 years, real estate's done okay. But I think they'll let it run because it's kind of lagging its historical averages in terms of growth.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Kind of agree on most of the things John is saying. So echoing his thoughts more or less on this one.
Good. All right. Well, it looks like we are set for some nice growth in 2021. So let's keep our fingers on the pulse next year when we provide more actual data to our listeners and how these cities are performing. And there's one other major topics for this week, which we are looking at. So New South Wales has released their budget for next year, and we're looking to basically scrap stamp duty or replace stamp duty with the ongoing annual land tax. That's been the talks for, I don't know, it popped up a few times this year, John, if I could remember correctly. But it seems like every time it's like a bit of a false start. I don't know whether to believe that it's actually happening or not, but it seems like this time it is actually happening to that extent. And if it does happen, then obviously it will be one of the biggest changes in essentially the stamp duty, which is considered a very outdated I don't think they've changed it for like what, 30 or 40 years, right? So that's why to put it in exact words, I think the New South Wales Treasurer Dominic Perrottet, I think it was, to say that it's one of those things that really just need to go. It's not applicable to the modern days.
Mm-hmm.
So if that does happen, and I think this time I'm probably going to turn the table to John first, given the fact that he's in Sydney. So, John, how do you reckon this is going to change the purchase behaviours for New South Wales, whether that's first home owners, whether that's going to be investors? What do you think is going to happen?
So it'll definitely have an impact, I think. I think it'll have a positive impact on real estate. But to sort of recap, they're trying to phase out land tax.
Mm.
And the way they're doing this is by giving new buyers a choice, probably from the 1st of July 2021, because this is a proposal. It hasn't passed Parliament yet. But the choice is expected to be you either pay your land you pay stamp duty up front, or you defer that and you pay an ongoing, like a land tax. They don't really call it land tax, but you pay land tax over the life of the property. Mm. And that decision attaches itself to the property. So if you decide to pay the land tax, you have to pay that forever, and that'll be passed on to subsequent buyers. There'll be different rates for owner-occupiers and investors. And they're saying that the inflection point or the break-even point is 12 years. So up until 12 years, it's cheaper to pay that ongoing land tax, that yearly tax of about $2,000 on $1 million home.
Mm-hmm.
After 12 years, it actually becomes more expensive to keep paying the land tax. So that's interesting. Now, what do I think? I think it will be good for the market. I think that most people, all people, myself included, we all look at our short-term interests. And when we go to buy a property, we'll say, well, I don't know what I'm going to be doing in 12 years' time. So I'm going to waive the stamp duty, opt for the land tax. And the state treasurer described the land tax option as more like a council rate, you know, something like that. So you pay that council rate and or the land tax, and that you make your decision later on what ends up happening. So because most people sell their properties within 8 to 10 years, I think that waiving the stamp duty and going for the land tax option is probably better anyway. I think it, you know, I was having a chat to someone about this morning actually, and his opinion was it will lead to a 4% jump in home values, and that 4% being the approximate amount of stamp duty that won't have to be incurred anymore. Mm. Maybe that will happen. I don't think it'll have a big impact this year because it's not baked into the books yet, but I think it's positive for real estate. I think it's positive for real estate. The one catch is this. We're kind of substituting a one-off tax in today's dollars, the stamp duty, for what is essentially an inflation-indexed tax for perpetuity. And, of course, the government would prefer that we have the regular ongoing small tax that actually gets indexed and goes up over time. So I think there's a bit of a catch, and the catch is that it ignores the time value of money, mm-hmm. that it's probably actually cheaper to pay the stamp duty because you're paying in today's dollars and it never gets indexed. But I throw it out to you guys. What do you think?
I just agree with what you said towards the end, John, that from the outside, it looks good that you don't have to pay the stamp duty anymore, right? But if you look at over the long run, it's clearly only going to help the state governments over the property owners, basically. And plus, to be honest, this is an add-on onto the council rates, right? So you're already paying whatever 2,000 council rates every year, plus now add another hypothetical number, just add a 2,000 on top of that. I mean, the bills do add up pretty quickly. So when you're buying property, it may look cheaper from the outset. Yeah, no stamp duty, I can quickly get in, but then the holding cost just keeps increasing, right? And as the holding cost increases, people will tend to walk away from it a little bit just because of that holding cost that it's, I have as a property owner, I just have to pay $4,000 or $5,000 just to hold on to my property every year. So maybe people will go Elon Musk style, where they just get rid of all their assets, essentially.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, to be honest. And you know, I definitely agree. I actually think that to be able to give people the opportunity, or to be able to give them the option about whether to pay it upfront or to basically pay it across the life of the property, is quite smart, in the sense that the government still be able to get the benefit of both sides. To that extent, but it gives people the flexibility of choosing which is better and more suitable for their financial circumstances. Because we all know that, for example, a lot of first home buyers don't have a lot of deposit, and that's been one of the main struggles. So, you know, the first home buyers are probably the one that's going to choose more of opting into the land tax type of scenario, because, you know, they can get into the property quicker. They don't need such a big deposit as such. And as a matter of fact, I think as part of this proposal, they are replacing the current stamp duty concessions provided to first home buyers with a new grant. I think it was about $25,000 or something. So, you know, in other words, if the first home buyers are buying, they're actually going to receive a $25,000 in addition to that. So, you know, I reckon that's incentivizing first home buyers to jump in with minimal deposit to a degree, and they can opt on basically paying that land tax over a longer term, but still be able to own the property a lot earlier. Whereas for investors, if I look at it from the investor's perspective, it's a very different story. Mm-hmm. Number one, the investors, you know, the ongoing land tax is going to add a lot onto the holding cost, like what you guys are saying. So does the number actually going to add up, you know? And that's my view, is actually it's going to drive a lot of investors out of New South Wales having New South Wales property, because all of a sudden you're going to be paying, assuming that moving forward, right? So I'm assuming here that the property you already own are grandfathered, so they don't have to pay that land tax, otherwise New South Wales government's double dipping here.
Mm-hmm.
So assume for a sec that the ones that you already own doesn't apply, but for any upcoming investment property that you're buying in New South Wales, if you do not pay the stamp duty up front, then you're going to be adding a couple of $1,000 every year moving forward as your ongoing cost. Now, we already know that for New South Wales, the yield is not great. We're probably looking at what? Houses are 2%, 2 point something percent yield. And in general, the apartment's probably looking at 3-4%, right? So all of a sudden, it's going to be a lot more negatively geared. So, numbers don't make sense. Property investors are probably going to go, well, it doesn't stack up. Why do I have to invest here? I'm going to look at somewhere else, which where my money's going to work harder for me, right? Mm-hmm. So if assuming they still keep the options open as an investor, I might say it makes more sense to pay stamp duty up front as a once-off, and then you still be able to hold the property for a longer term. That's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. The other thing that could drive people away as part of a proposal is that they are including a property tax rate that would support and incentivize home ownership with a lower rate for owner-occupiers and higher rate for investors and commercial properties. In other words, they're actually going to add an additional tax on top of that for property investors across New South Wales having either residential or commercial property. So it's actually great news for homeowners or first home buyers. But, looking from the investor's perspective or from investor's lens, I'm going, well, hang on a sec, all the landlords now copping it, basically. Mm-hmm. And just imagine for a second that next year when the borders fully open, when we've got students coming back in, a lot of landlords right now is already suffering, and they're looking to sell properties in Sydney and Melbourne because they're taking both a price decrease in New South Wales for apartments as well as a rental reduction. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to get this hit or potentially get this hit moving forward. Then who would want to be a landlord in New South Wales is going to be my question.
That is the key point. It's a trap, basically, to some extent, the way I look at it. So you save over the short run, but it ends up costing you more, like what John and you said just before, the long run, ends up costing you a lot more. So
I think it'll also encourage, to some degree, so investors are probably going to go for the land tax option. It's tax deductible, but it will also create a very mild incentive to flip. So there's going to be a lot more short-termism. Buy the property, fix it up, and you put it back on the market. There was always a bit of an incentive to do that, but I think that will grow. I always get a bit nervous when tax considerations drive investment decisions. I mean, it's normal and it's baked into the cake, but you want as few choices when it comes to taxes as possible, I think, because you don't want that to necessarily distort your decision making. But I think it's generally positive for young people and first home buyers, and we'll see how it pans out.
Definitely.
I think it'll be interesting to see what will happen with the public consultations in the next few weeks, as I think it's open from now till I think end of this month. It's a short period of consultation this time, actually, because I think they actually want to push it in around March 2021, as early as March 2021 to put it in place. So, they haven't got a lot of time. So they're going to be moving fast, but we'll see what's going to happen out of it and whether other states are going to follow as well. I think that's the main topics. We'll give John, I'll let John to give us a bit of update on the property with the numbers.
Auction numbers.
Sure. So really, really solid weekend again in the real estate market. We had much of the same, consistently high volumes. We had consistently high clearance rates. And, this is spring, so this is the peak selling season, and we probably shouldn't draw too much from what's going on at the moment, because this is peak optimism, I suppose, in real estate. But Sydney had a clearance rate of 79.2%, which is really close to 80%. Melbourne had really strong clearance rates at 73.8%. Brisbane at 61%. Adelaide at 87.8%. So Adelaide is a very tight market at the moment. We see very low vacancy rates there as well, and obviously high clearance rates. And similarly, Canberra, again, on sort of low volumes, which is typical of the market, but they've got a clearance rate of 89.2%. It's nearly 100% clearance. So the market's chugging along. It's spring. The auction market's about to finish, actually, because we're, mid... mid-November, and you know the sales are going to stop in about 4 weeks. So I suppose there's a little bit of urgency about people wanting to buy before Christmas. But there's only one other observation, two other observations actually. One is that this little mini boom or the high clearance rates are attracted more to the houses than the units. So we're seeing clearance rates for houses above 80% and the clearance rates for units below 80%. So there is a difference there. That also tells us that it's more about lifestyle than about affordability, because houses are so much more expensive than units, but the market is still opting towards houses. I think it's about personal space. It's about having a backyard. It's about moving further out into outer suburbs. So that's potentially interesting, something to watch.
Mm-hmm.
My second observation is that I think that it's possible that the worm is turning on the big COVID trend, which was to move into outer suburbs. The Central Coast, for example, had one of its lowest clearance rates in many weeks at just 70%. So the Central Coast, which is sort of that lifestyle suburb outside of Sydney, was leading the charge at nearly 100% clearance rates when most other parts of Sydney were languishing. It's sort of flipping back. So the old established suburbs in middle ring or inner ring suburbs are starting to assert themselves. If I look at the lower North Shore, the clearance rates there are 82%. So maybe people are starting to go back to work. Maybe people are starting to think, well, actually, I do need to have that proximity to the amenities of the city. This will play out over a long period of time, but real estate's in a good place.
Yeah. Adds to everything we have discussed. I mean, we've pretty much discussed this over the last few weeks now, that it's the middle ring and the outer suburbs that will end up performing well because of the whole situation. It just confirms all of that to some extent. I think that's the only thing to add over here. David?
It's interesting that you make that observation, John, because I know we spoke about whether at some point in time that trend is going to turn. Right. So, you know, I certainly wasn't expecting that the trend may be turning so quickly and so early, but I think in the next few weeks we'll see. So is that just Central Coast? What about the South Coast down Wollongong? So are you also seeing similar trends around there, that the auction clearance rate is dropping?
I don't have data for that, but okay. The lowest clearance rates are in the northwest, the west, and the Central Coast.
Okay,
which is a bit of a flip. So
right.
I think it's too early to call, Jazz, and I still think that you're right that people are looking at larger blocks, but it could be turning a little bit. So we'll have to keep an eye on.
Okay,
on that. I was chatting to an agent yesterday. I mentioned San Susi, and she was saying. She was an agent from that sort of Southern Beaches area. And I said, oh, I've seen the statistics on San Susi. There's a zero clearance. There's a zero vacancy rate and clearance rates are high. And she jumps in and says, just houses.
That's why you want to make that distinction, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah,
yeah. We know you love your San Susi. You always have to bring it up. So
I've got to get some more examples.
It's all good. All right. Well, thanks for the update, John. Jazz, anything else?
No, everything else, all the markets, gold, silver, and all that we discussed generally are pretty much on pause at the moment. We did make a prediction on Bitcoin that it will probably see 20K in 6 months. So we said that, I think, in September, towards September end or something. And I think it's well on its way for that. It's just shy of 20%. So it's sitting at about 18K. I still think towards mid-December, Jan-ish, we'll see. So we'll keep an eye. But the predictions are looking good so far.
Yeah. This was all yours, that prediction. I know you said the royal we. We made a prediction. No, you made the prediction, because all of my predictions go wrong. So what happened to – why did Bitcoin move up so much? Because I blinked and it was $18,000.
I think this it's a very different beast, John, and some of the stuff we have discussed in the past as well related to it, which is the overall macro setup. If you look at the chart landscape of how it has been trading over the last 10 years style, and also the halving plays into it, which is the supply gets cut into half. So all of that, I think, is pretty much adding, and on top of that, a lot of positive news, like PayPal was the big piece of news that came out, I think. Some good positive news, and the overall macro setup, similar to what we discussed with the commodity, what we have discussed with commodities in the past, is pretty much adding the fuel to the fire. So I still think it's on track for that 20% to hit that 20K around December, mid-Jan. Next year will be very, very interesting with the real estate, commodities, and some of the crypto stocks. So we'll keep an eye on and keep letting our listeners know about that. Anything else before we wrap this up?
Nope.
Like always, it's good. It's Friday. Markets are good. News is positive. Next year, we'll be talking about boom. 2020 will be gone. It's a few more weeks. 4 weeks, guys. Hang on. It's been tough. But play safe, stay safe, and we'll see you guys next week. John Jazz, David.